Ride Report, a podcast from the Master Executive Council of JetBlue Alpha for the union pilots of JetBlue. Now from New York, Ride Report.
Well, hello once again, and welcome back, fellow JetBlue Alpha pilots, to Ride Report. I'm your host, J.R. Hall from JetBlue Alpha Central Air Safety. I tell you, have we got an episode here? Yes, obviously the subject of what we'll discuss today is in the title of the episode. But please, stick around and give this a good listen, because we will get into exactly just how both easy and hard it can be to get the opportunity and then see through building pairings that some may call, and to my guests, hang on, you know, we've all heard it, we all see it, the worst ever. This is the worst month in the world. Oh, these are awful. These are terrible. Whatever else gets tossed around every month in pairing construction. We'll find out here today much of the process that we already know. You can't make everybody happy, but man, there's just too many variables in the game. We're going to get into a lot of those today. It is a huge education process for JetBlue Alpha pilots to hear what goes on in the background. And our guests absolutely understand that you can't make everybody happy, but the work is absolutely important. They work tirelessly on getting the most productive sets of flying out to our pilots on a monthly basis, mind you. And I want to afford them the most time to cover as many topics as we can. But like to welcome back to Ride Report, JetBlue Alpha System Scheduling Committee Chair, Captain Scott Gelhoff. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Wonderful. Thank you. And big fan of the podcast and also a frequent guest, Captain Danny Auslander. Dan, how are you, man?
Hey, good morning. It's a great day today. Glad we're here.
Fantastic. All right. There's so much to get in. And I poke and fun, and it's, you know, we all read on social media platforms, if you will. Oh my God, these pairings are just, and it's for either one of you, just a general first question. None of that really gets under your skin, right? I mean, it's just people venting because something just doesn't work right.
I think it is frustrating a little bit, but we understand, you know, you can't make the pairings perfect for everybody. Obviously, it's a challenge to make something that everybody can enjoy, but we work to improve the overall quality as opposed to doing like specific items. Where's my 30-hour Bermuda layover at the all you can
at the all inclusive
or whatever?
Right. Yeah. And the entire group, Danny, with you on that monthly basis, are Captain Matt Dunkel and then Captain Chris Panette as well, correct?
Absolutely. Those two guys are the engineers. They are the ones who actually get in there, run the pairing optimizer. They understand the settings, know how to drive the thing, know what tweaks move us in which direction, and they get incredible props. Without the work that Captain Panette and Captain Dunkel are doing, we would not be in the spot that we are, where we have the ability to produce the superior pairing sets.
Open question to either one of you. Let's go back to the very beginning. The pilot working group, correct me if I'm wrong, because that this will predate me. That was pretty much the last opportunity that the pilots had with the company to create or generate pairings. Is that correct?
In terms of pre-CBA, yes, they had a pairing working group. So Casey Cole and Chris Panette did the pairings pre-CBA and helped show the company at that time how to make pairings under their work rules at that time.
And some of those pairings back then, Was it the 11-hour 3-day trip? Was it the, you know, Syracuse or Rochester overnights? You know, all that pre-CBA stuff. I think a lot of us have forgotten
some really challenging things in the pairing set. Some things had kind of come and gone over the years. Remember way back when any 2-duty 3-day paid 13.5 hours,
yeah.
And then the situation that we had that was really problematic before the CBA is that you could literally take an entire month of flying, which is to say minimum days off, so probably 18 days of flying, and there was not enough credit to build a complete line. There were literally entire lines physically worth of flying sitting in open time every month that were unable to build a legal schedule because the credit was so low. I mean, we had 3 days that paid 11 hours and didn't even have that worth of flying. That was just paying on rig. That really was the biggest problem before we got the CBA rigs in place.
And that segues perfectly into the next step in looking back at this timeline is now CBA 1 and the accomplishments of CBA 1 that made those changes. Can you touch on just a few of the bigger, more fundamental changes when it relates to pairing construction?
When we signed the CBA, there were some significant changes, significant impacts right away. The first of which was what's contained in Section 25A, the required distribution. So it was no longer permissible to have 15 or 20% of the flying in 5-day trips that a lot of pilots didn't like. It was no longer permissible to have essentially no turns at a base. The requirements for commutability, the fact that basically at least 30% of all 4 days and any four-duty 5 days had to be commutable. And additionally, we added some significant scheduling restrictions for red eyes in 25A. And those immediately at signing, we had the protections in there to now require the 16 hours prior and 14 hours following any red eye, which prevented the day sleep and immediate turnaround. We also added the max scheduled duty periods, which really was a formalization of the construction buffers that used to exist in the FSM. We formalized all the rigs that we used to have in the FSM, and along with that, we added the average daily guarantee. And that the 5-hour ADG really made some changes. This was the other significant structural change in pairing construction. The reason being a lot of those trips that I was just talking about where you couldn't build a line, things like a 3-duty 4-day that paid 17 hours, that now had to pay 20. So there was a significant cost impact to the company on the 2-duty 3 days, 3-duty 4 days, 4-duty 5 days, those one-duty short kind of pairings, which really kind of forced the company's hand when they tried to economize, because all of a sudden those pairings had a huge rig cost in them. The big benefit and the reason that ADG mattered to us is that now everything works to build a line. Every day of every trip is worth at least 5 hours, and therefore you no longer have these math problems where you can fill every legal working day in a month but can't get the credit into the window.
There was all, and I know that we're going to touch on this, you know, but we think back to right now what we're talking about with CBA 1 achievements was 2018, right?
Correct.
In there was language written to safety fast. And I think that has definitely come to the forefront now for our pilots and understanding what safety fast is. It does have a viable importance. But back then, that started the legwork. It started the historical data collection process that we now actively get to use. And I don't want to get ahead of the skis with it, but it does touch on fatigue. It does touch on pairing construction.
No, absolutely.
Scott or Dan, take us into now MOU 20. Danny, awesome recap of what we achieved with CBA 1, but why was MOU 20 as important as it is? Why was it necessary to be able to negotiate to create that language for additional access for us?
So after a CBA signing, we saw an immediate shift. Obviously, that was the first big push to make the pairings as inexpensive as possible, and in doing so, impacting quality of life. So Dan and I started doing pairing construction for about 6 months at it, trying to learn from the company builders. Well, the problem is the company builders trying to teach us, it wasn't terribly effective, because while we were learning the techniques, we're running into the same problems. You know, they're telling us how to make them as cheaply as possible, and that's clearly not our goal. Enter Chris Panette and Matt Dunkel, who are interested in helping out, but there's no requirement for the company to provide them with pairing construction access. The contract calls out for the chair and the vice chair. And so the problem was we couldn't get them access to do it. And then the other problem is that we had intended, or the original CBA had envisioned, putting out a product, and that the scheduling committee could then edit that product without increasing the cost, but choosing, you know, imagine you have a table of poker chips. We decide to where we're going to slide those poker chips around. Mm. Well, now imagine that the company goes, we're only going to play with two poker chips. Makes it difficult to move things around.
Right. Sure.
So MOU-20 comes in. And the big success of MOU-20 is, one, we have the same level access to everything from the start as the company does. So when the pairing segments come out, so for example, today, we will be building for September.
And just for like, just for reference, you know, we're recording here today on the 12th of July, and you guys are already looking to, you know, a month and a half, 2 months probably.
To build September, yeah. Right. And so we'll get all that information, you know, what segments are where, what the strategies are going to be for the build this month, how many hours need to be in each space. We get all that information, and Chris and Matt can start production. That's key one. They have the ability to build from scratch now. And in doing so, they have the ability to sort of generate their own extra poker chips. And we can make savings in places, allowing them to spend some poker chips on quality of life items that didn't exist previously. So that's key one. And then the other key is that those parts of the MOU don't expire. There's a part that does expire. And we've been very fortunate working with the company. They see the benefits of our expertise and have agreed to continue the process, even though there are components that have expired. So that allows us to continue on with the build as the MOU directed.
I want to go into two key terms that I think more often than not get tossed around the line, and maybe not a lot of people understand exactly what it means to your team, right? So either one of you, feel free to dive into it. But number one is breakage rate. And the second one is, you know, what we've talked about here today is the word cheaper. And it can sometimes be, you know, negatively correlated, but a cheaper pairing may be more positively correlated as well. And there's some minutiae in there, absolutely. But when it comes to looking and thinking about those two terms that we hear tossed around on the line, start with just cheaper.
Well, cheaper, and when we talk about cost, it's not necessarily an individual pairing. We're talking about the sets, the overall pairing sets. And the thing to remember is that these pairing sets are covering in the 190 and the 220, thousands of block hours, in the 320, tens of thousands of block hours per month. And so these solutions cost into the millions of dollars per month when you look at the full set. And what we're talking about in terms of differential typically is a few thousand dollars in the 190 and the 220, and a few tens of thousands of dollars in the 320. And so given the magnitude of the overall cost and the fact that the cost differential really is fairly small, it's tenths of a percent or occasionally single digit percentages, the concept of using the cheaper, which is almost always the company set, and what the potential outcomes are of that is what we focus on and what we highlight when we present our solutions to the company. And we really focus on things that we feel like matter for the pilots. And a lot of these things surprisingly matter for the company as well. The company's focus obviously is on cost, and our focus for the pilots is on quality of life. But these two things often can really align. We don't like getting disrupted. We don't like getting emergency assigned in the middle of a trip. We don't like it when we can't finish a day as planned, and we intended to end up in West Palm Beach, and now we ended up in Burlington. So a big focus is on making the trips reliable, and that includes not building super short overnights into the solution so that there's time, even if we get in an hour or an hour and a half even late, that we're going to be able to fly our next day as planned rather than being timed out for crew rest and now having to deadhead somewhere to rejoin. So that's an enhancement that benefits ourselves as pilots, but also is beneficial to the company and their structure. We focus on things like limiting day sleeps, limiting the circadian disruptions that come from having to fly all the way through the window of circadian low in the red eye period. There's also some things that are really simple. For example, encouraging the optimizer to follow the physical aircraft flow that's provided to us from the commercial side of the company, which means less likelihood of crews having to swap airplanes in the middle of the day. We can limit when limos happen, you know, not have limos during the rush hour in the Northeast cities and in South Florida, not have limos in the red eye period. Those are, as we've talked about, sliding the chips around. Those are all things that have a cost. They have an expense as we develop the pairing set. And therefore, since we're talking aggregate cost of the whole set, we've liberated some chips there that we can turn around and stack up and spend on quality improvements.
When it comes to breakage rate, and we all think, okay, IROPS, right? We often see it a lot, especially in the summertime, where you start to get delays and everything else starts to happen, things unravel, ATC, weather, yada, yada, yada. We come into breakage rates on pairings. It's not always weather-driven. It's not always an IROP-driven event. There are breakage possibilities within pairings as well. A pairing can just suffer from an enormous breakage rate versus another one.
Yeah, I think different construction techniques. Obviously, we're trying to build more robust pairings, and that those, as Dan was saying, naturally have a quality of life enhancement for the pilot group. But, you know, not leaving enough space. You know, if you do a segment that you know routinely delays, for example, and you build that right into a short overnight, those are the kinds of things that lead more towards breakage as opposed to, building some extra layover time.
So, and Scott, as well, with talking about breakage rates and all this other stuff, somebody is going to come back to you and literally say, hey, look, I read somewhere that we had software that was supposed to do something to prevent all of this stuff. And in honestly, we do. It's called a pairing optimizer, and it's no small purchase. It's no small program.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's exactly how we build pairings. It's this, we use a software that's built by Jepson, the Jepson pairing optimizer. Its purpose or its design really is to minimize the cost. It makes decisions by pennies, to change costs. So the way we manipulate it is a little counterintuitive, and the guys are great at it. It takes a very special mind to be able to figure out how this thing works, but you basically tell the optimizer that doing a behavior or doing a thing, let's say you want to have more 4 days, you say, hey, if you don't build a certain number of 4 days, every one less than that costs an extra $150. You have this pretend monopoly money that you're moving around and fool it into thinking it's going to cost more to do something if it doesn't do it. So that offsets the actual cost, and the system builds around that monopoly money, and you push that money around until you get the set that you need or you want. The downside is the system does want to produce naturally as cheap a set as possible. The things that we like to do are pushing costs. For example, please make 12-hour layovers on the 190. The system goes, okay, I can do that, no problem. That doesn't cost that much. We'll put that penalty in there.
One of the things that's really important to recognize here is what the timeline is of this. Why can't we make this change? Why can't we be very responsive to what's going on in the world. And the reason is that this is really a 4-month cycle. As Scott mentioned previously, it's the middle of July. It's July 12th as we're recording this. And we are going to start September pairing production here in just a few days. The September pairings have to be completed, selected, finalized by about the 25th of July, because on the 1st of August, they go out for bid in PBS. So those trips are then flown in September, and it takes a few days into October to do the data gathering and to see how that month of September flew. So anytime we're looking at a change or looking at an adjustment in how we build, the feedback loop is really 4 months long. You know, once we see in October what happened in September, that's when we're building December. So it's really a 4-month long loop to be able to close anything and really make a data-driven change. Which is why this is a very slow and very procedural process.
I'll add in that the fact that, just like you said, you know, when we finally get the data from September, which is a trough month, we're starting up into a trough month, and we're about to go into a peak month for December, even the data that you get may not be completely applicable to the next set that you're building.
And that's a really good point. We really have several seasons a year here at JetBlue, and we do not run very much. It's repeatable from month to month. As we get into different seasons of the year, the shape of our system changes. There are times of year that we do a lot more north-south flying domestically, peak times for going to Florida. There are times of the year where we do more transcons. There are times of the year where the island traffic really picks up, and times when it shallows off. And so the shape of our system and the repeatability really is pretty minimal until the next year orbits around. And the seasonality of the different markets doesn't necessarily align. For example, as we get into the fall season here, the Florida travel drops off, but the Caribbean also drops off because it's hurricane season. The Caribbean ramps up at a different time than Florida does, because it's driven by, again, the hurricane season and when it's low season in the islands versus the Florida market, which is more school calendar driven. So there are continuous ebbs and flows in the system. And that's really one of the first inputs into pairing construction is the commercial schedule. The company's developing and setting it for sale most of a year out. Typically, it's 300 to 330 days in advance that's out there for sale. But they then continue to refine those schedules. Flights get added, flights get deleted, times get changed. And as it gets into the a few months out, that schedule is really finalized and locked in. And that's why if you buy a retail airline ticket 9 months out, you may get a handful of schedule change notifications that your trip times have been adjusted a few minutes here, a few minutes there. So once the commercial schedule is dialed in, that then is turned into aircraft routing. And that aircraft routing, of course, is not yet a specific tail number at that time, but it's generic tails. It starts with, for example, A321 number one, number two, number three, the 190s, the 220s, the Mint aircraft, the 32Ms, the NEOs, the LRs. There's all of our different fleets and subfleets each have their own set of routings. Those routings are where the company includes required maintenance, the touch time for deep cleaning and in stations, overnights. And that's what becomes the input file for the pairing construction. So that's one input. The next thing is our rule set. And this is the CBA requirements, the required buffers, block time limit, be it table A or augmented, table B limits for FDP from the regs and from our contract, because sometimes one is more controlling than the other. Mm. Additionally, there's specific feedback that goes in from our base reps, certain asks that come from various bases, and we work to incorporate that where we can. We've done a lot of work specific to LAX, and I'll talk about that in a little while, but that really has come from both scientific research, working these pairings through safety fast and modeling how they work for the pilots, but also really through input from the feet on the ground as to what is more or less palatable to the various groups of our pilots. So once we have that input, once we have the commercial schedule, the next thing that goes in is the system hours. And this is a company responsibility to determine the hours available and the hours to be assigned to each base. And that's calculated primarily by the headcount of pilots in each base. And this is something where they have to look at both captains and first officers, because either set of pilots can be the limiting driver, and they are reliably different. It is a very, very unusual month, especially in the 320, where the same base is the controlling driver for captain and for FO allocation. But since we fly matched pairings where the captain and FO are together the whole time, at least as scheduled, both of those hangs have to be accounted for. So the company then makes the decision, and lots of data goes into this, lots of information as far as the pre-assigned blocks, training, MEC days, company business days, vacations, pilots out on leave. This all gets accounted to determine how many hours each base can fly. And one of the problems we see, and this is something that has to get adjusted via system bid, is that the staffing in the base is not necessarily always correct for the amount of flying that ideally falls to a base. And so what ends up happening is flying gets forced, which is to say the company may determine that there needs to be an extra 2,000 or 3,000 or 5,000 credit hours of flying in a base compared to the amount of flying that's really native to that base, which is how many block hours of out and back flying are attached to that base. So other flying has to be found from somewhere else into the system and built into that base, and that typically affects the economy and the flow of the trips. And as a pilot, you may notice that, for example, if you fly a trip out of Boston where on day one you go to Florida and then you spend all of day two and day three doing turns to cities that are non-base cities. For example, you go to end up in Fort Myers on day one, and then on day two you go to White Plains and back to Fort Myers. And then on day three you go to Providence and then go to Tampa. That is all flying that is not native to any particular city, because neither end of that flying is a crew base. And so that flying then gets pushed, gets forced by the optimizer into the bases that need additional flying to meet their quota for staffing. Another factor that has to be incorporated at that time is what is intended to be the ALV for the month. Does the ALV work within the allowable range and within the realities of where we can build viable lines? And most importantly with that, we have the TLV, the trailing average protection of the CBA, in order to keep the flying relatively consistent over the long term. And so that prevents any one status from going significantly low or significantly high for repetitive months. So all of that has to be accounted for. Once the hours are assigned, that's a hard setting, that's a target in the optimizer that, again, is, as we mentioned, penalties, has to be met. The next thing that goes in are the operational mandates from the company. And these are requirements that are put in that are things to prevent days that, as we've mentioned, are expected or probable breakage points. And certain of those can be things like legs that must start duty. And what I mean by must start duty is, okay, this flight has to be the first flight in a duty period, which essentially says the overnight has to be there. This is something that's used in a lot of the Caribbean flying. The great benefit to us is that it causes some island overnights, and a lot of those are those really nice 20 to 25 hour island overnights. But the overnights are built like that for a reason, and that reason is that a lot of those legs, when paired up, are just long enough that something on the outbound side would cause the crew to time out. And while it's never easy to replace a crew mid-trip, it's essentially impossible to replace a crew that's on an island somewhere. So we just build those from the start to be essentially impossible to break. It could be something as simple as an extra 30 minutes of taxi time out of New York because there's thunderstorms on one side of the metro. There's also additional crew connection time that's built in certain places. We say in our big focus cities that at certain times of the day, we need an extra 10 minutes or an extra 15 minutes to allow crews to change airplanes. Now, in reality, when the pairings fly, that isn't always there because the aircraft swap may not have been a scheduled swap, but all of the planned scheduled aircraft swaps have some protection time built into them to give us the opportunity to get off the first airplane, get a cup of coffee, make our nest on the new airplane, and be ready to go. Certain flights that are considered high priority, for example, the shuttle flying on the East Coast, those are typically built, for example, as independent turns, so that if there's a crew availability problem, it can very quickly be recrewed. So these inputs all come in from the company and are all, again, locked into the optimizer. The next thing that comes in, and this is something that we've really developed and enhanced over the last year or so, is fatigue prevention. And as we mentioned, upon signing of the CBA, SafetyFast, which is the fatigue analytics software, came into play. And for the first time there, we had the very basic protection, which was a holistic score number for the trip, and any trips below that scoring number were not legal trips. But we've made a lot of advancements since then, and while that score number is still a floor, we've come up with a lot of different analytics and different ways, both with the ALPA Fatigue Committee and also the company Human Factors Group, to enhance the rule sets and to build certain things into the trips to identify risk factors for fatigue. And in cases where combinations of multiple risk factors were popping up in the same pairings, we have built rule sets into the optimizer to mitigate these multiple risk factors, to take them out of the pairing set in order to improve the overall fatigue risk profile of the pairings as constructed. Right now, it's something that's really done fundamentally by hand, but it is something that going forward with a software update that's coming for the JEP optimizer, we'll be able to automate.
That was a huge win for us, by the way. We went from, because putting in a lot of these fatigue fixes has a significant cost increase, and the companies agreed to, both on their side and our side, we develop a table that identifies and prevents certain red eye combinations from being made. The company agrees to implement that on their side when they do their build, as we do this competitive build process, which we'll talk about a little later.
Very good. We'll be right back with now part two, sitting down with the system scheduling committee, going over pairing construction here on Ride Report.
Ride Report. Ride Report. Ride Report.